You know what time it is, folks. It's time for another exciting episode of In the Hot Box with Doc Rio. I am Mario Lawson, your host, of course. And yes, I am back. I am back right here at KPCRadio.com, getting ready to come from an event that goes on annually. I'm glad to be back and talk about this event. Why? Because it is the LA Pierce College, Los Angeles Pierce College 2018 Speech Tournament. Yes, this event happens every year, and it was packed. This place was packed to the brim, all right? Now, I've never seen the Great Hall packed all the way to capacity before, but this is the first time I've ever seen it, and it was full of communication students. So you want to hear more about this event, folks. So you're going to want to stay tuned and hear the rest of this event story. And before I jump right into this, I want to make sure I thank the program director at KPCRadio.com for inviting me back to host this, to be the radio show host for this broadcast of the 2018 Pierce College Speech Tournament. Come on, man. This is just amazing. The show out, the energy here, the speeches here, the knowledge here, the wisdom that comes out of this place. You know, I mean, it's just amazing. So I want to make sure also I thank Jeff Farr for being, the advisor to KPCRadio.com, the professor who teaches broadcasting 10 to the new incoming radio show host. I mean, Jeff Favre, thank you. Thank you for going out there and making sure that we all understand and have a place to broadcast our thoughts and ideas and share other people's experiences. Other people's experiences, broadcasting our thoughts and ideas, maybe through these other people's experiences, right here on KPCRadio.com. So, and without forgetting, because at the beginning of this, this broadcast, she doesn't mention her name, so I want to make sure I mention a woman who's dear, very dear to me, Professor Michelle Silver. And Professor Michelle Silver, I want to thank you again for inviting me, asking, if I can come back to this competition to also help you broadcast it live and share it to our community right here, the Los Angeles Pierce College community. You have been organizing this event and pushing it strong. And as it is said in this broadcast, you are not thanked enough. So we want to thank you from KPCRadio.com. And we want to thank you from all of us, communication and broadcast, students right here in Los Angeles Pierce College. Okay. So thank you again, Michelle. And next, I want to give you a little bit of brief about this particular broadcast. Okay, I'm going to start out because I was live at the event. I was broadcasting live from the event. I did interviews from the event. So I'm going to start out this event with a little intro. So you're going to hear me say in the hot box again with Doc Rio. Yes. And I'm Mario Lawson. Yes. At KPCRadio.com. Yes. You're going to hear that one more time because we want you to know what you're listening to. The Los Angeles Pierce College 2018 Speech Tournament right here on KPCRadio.com. Okay, it's broken in two segments because this is a long piece. The first category is the informative speech. And you're going to be able to hear speeches from these actual students who are coming out powerful and strong, explaining something that they feel dear and passionate about, okay? And then the next category is going to be the persuasive speech, and that's going to be in the second half of the audio production here. So you're going to see two audio productions if you're looking at this on the website. Yes, this is a pre-recorded broadcast because we couldn't broadcast live from the Great Hall, not just yet, but we will be able to soon, I'm sure. So stay tuned, folks. But at the same time, in the next broadcast, you're also going to hear the judges' deliberations, who they select for the 6 out of the 10 finalists. Now, the 10 finalists, I'm going to get back to that real quick, but the 6 out of the 10 finalists who will win the award for best either informative or best persuasive speech. Now, make sure you stay tuned because at the very end of this production, we're going to have some interviews from the contestants and how it felt for them to present their speeches on stage and even a little bit more. So stay tuned to that. And last but not least, I just want you to know that these contestants spent the day earlier as semifinalists in a grueling two-category 10-event challenge. Well, not each of them. They each had 10 different events, and they were judged the first place of each of their events. So this wasn't an easy competition. Any of these students could have competed with any of each other and not made it to this final category. So just be aware of that, and be aware that this competition is something that I think all of you need to experience. So without further ado, let's jump right in. This is Mario Lawson reporting for KPCRadio.com. All right. You know what time it is, folks. It's time for the 2018 speech competition. I'm in the hot box. This is Mario Lawson, you know, Doc Rio, right here hosting the 2018 speech competition here at Los Angeles Pierce College. For those who don't know, we're getting down to the finalists, and they're starting to creep in. People are starting to creep in through the doors. It's starting to look good out here. We got the DJ spinning a little Michael Jackson for you. So stay tuned as we come back, and I'll get you more information about what's going on today here at Los Angeles Pierce College. This is Mario Lawson reporting for KPCRadio.com.
Hi, everybody. Good afternoon. Welcome to our sixth annual tournament. Today. It's so exciting to see a packed house. I have to say, this is our sixth year, and every year we think, are we going to get students to come? And every year, right, we just get bigger and bigger. But that's a credit to all of you for being here and supporting the event. So thank you so much for being here, for participating, and coming out to speak. Before we get started, I want to invite our ASO representative, Isha Pasricha, who's going to give you the formal welcome. And if it wasn't for ASO, none of this would be possible. So I'm going to turn it over to Isha, who is our Vice President of ASO and also our President-elect for the 2018-2019 year.
Oh my God, there are so many students here. This is amazing. Hi everybody, my name is Isha Pasricha, and just like Professor introduced me, I am the current Vice President of your student body government and the next president-elect. Thank you so much for being here, and honestly, I genuinely want to thank the whole communication department and the professors. You guys are amazing. Like, come on. Have you seen so many professors come together for such an amazing event and like laughing and cheering you guys on? Like, this is amazing. Woo! Thank you so much. Thank you. ASO, your student body government, is to create and fund events that students thrive on, not only on an educational level, but also events that help you create a community in your community college. So we are so happy that such an amazing event where so more than 300 students are here and barely any chairs left. So thank you so much for this event. On that note, I really want to make an important announcement of a very important event that we are working on. It's called the Undocumented Day. And this is the day where we want to inform students and family members or any person from our community who's undocumented and would need some information of how to get around with it. So the Los Angeles Community College District Chancellor, Dr. Francisco Rodriguez, is also invited to this event. So please note the date. It's on Saturday, May 19th from 9:30 to 4 p.m. So if you know anybody who's undocumented, any family, friends, or community members who might need some help, please bring them here to this event. And this event is just amazing if you just need information for a friend or anybody else. And hopefully, you know, it creates a more secure environment for our college students. We want you to know that we are here for you, and we want to help you out with anything that's possible. Your student body government is standing by. If you know a family friend who needs help, you can privately come and talk to us as well. And that's about it. Thank you so much for this event, and we're so happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Isha. So I was so excited to get the event started that I forgot to introduce myself, right? The first public speaking no-no. So my name is Michelle Silver, and I'm an associate professor here at Pierce College, for those of you that don't know me, in the Communication Studies Department. There's lots of friendly faces and students that I have here to support the event, but welcome. It's really nice to meet all of you. So the moment you've all been waiting for, we're going to announce the top 10 finalists, and we're going to ask our chair, Professor Yevrim Dougoudian, to do the honors.
So first of all, we want to thank all of you as a department for being here. I know it's Friday. We know last night was Thursday. Was it Thursdays for college students? Just kidding. I know that. All right. So anyways, we want to thank you all. I'm going to give a quick spiel about our department. We are the Department of Communication Studies. You'll see on your chairs we put some pamphlets about our major. If you're interested, you can pull over any of our faculty and ask us any questions. I also wear a second hat, so I'll go into the spiel right now. I'm also the honor director, so if you want to get to an amazing UC or Cal State, go ahead and contact us and we'll get you in an honors program once you qualify. With that being said, let's get to our list. The first list, and I'll ask those names that I call to please come up on stage, and then stay on stage so we can take a couple of pictures and then we'll move forward. Our first area, our informative category. First up, can we get Anna Lundmark, please? All right, our second person in the category, Orion Fitlovich. Robert Johnston. Sato. And last but not least, Ellen Lenderman. Our persuasive category, please come to the stage, Emma Greenberg. David Arujo. Amir Rod Akarado. And last but not least, I appreciate all of you, Michael Sawinski.
Let's hear it for our top 10 speakers. Congratulations to our top 10 finalists. Give a big round of applause. Thank you. But also a huge round of applause for everybody that participated today. We had about 75 students coming out to speak in the informative and persuasive category, which is absolutely amazing. And it's a success and it's a win just to come here and do it because it's a big challenge. So my hat's off to you. Really great job to everybody, so congratulations once again. So before we get started and I do my formal introduction of our wonderful judge panel, I'm gonna actually call up one of our judges, Dr. John Kephart, to come and explain the process of how we actually arrived here. So Dr. John Kephart.
Before I say anything about the process, you're gonna hear a lot of people that are thanked today. It took a lot of people to do a lot of work to put this together, but the person that probably won't get thanked by herself is Michelle Silver. Your AS president-elect pointed out that one of the things that Associate Students does is it helps to create community. Those of you that came out to participate today have actually joined a community that's been around for about 2,500 years. Competitive public speaking began with the ancient Greeks, and so you are carrying on a long and proud tradition. How many of you get nervous before you do public speaking? Look around the room. Notice it should be about everyone. There's one Pew Research survey that said that 9 out of 10 people experienced some form of public speaking anxiety. That 10th person is a liar. Everyone experiences some form of public speaking anxiety because you feel anxiety when it's important. So you were doing something important today. Another Pew Research survey indicated that 7 out of 10 Americans would rather be shot in the face than give a public speech. Jerry Seinfeld reminds us that at any given funeral, that means more people would rather be in the casket than giving the eulogy. What that means here is that you all today basically conquered death. So give yourselves a round of applause. As we said, we had just about 75 folks participate today, which means the 10 folks that made it up here are the top 10% of competitors. If you didn't make it up today, don't feel bad. It was really hard to do so. Only the first place speaker in each round made it up. And in every one of those rooms, we had at least 9, in some rooms, 11 people competing. And so just because you weren't up here doesn't mean you didn't do a great job today, so you should still feel proud of yourselves. What you're gonna see are folks are gonna come up, and these top 10 speakers, we're gonna break them up by event. You're gonna see informative speaking and persuasive speaking separately. Each person will give a 5 to 7 minute speech, and then our 3 judges will rank them. And so the order will be determined by who had the lowest rank. So who was the closest to first place on all 3 ballots will be granted champion. But everyone, as we already said, should feel extremely proud of yourself just for being here. So before I bring Michelle up, once again, give yourself another round of applause. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Kephard, for the explanation of the process. Okay, so I'd now like to introduce our prestigious 3-judge panel, starting with Dr. Don Brownlee. If you would just kind of turn around and kind of wave so everyone can see you. Dr. Don Brownlee received his BA in Government and in Speech Communication from Texas Christian University, his MA in Speech and Theater from the University of North Texas, his PhD in Speech Communication with an emphasis in Group and Organizational Communication from the University of Texas at Austin. Go Longhorns! Dr. Brownlee teaches courses in argumentation, persuasion, political communication, group communication, legal communication, freedom of speech, and nonverbal communication. Dr. Brownlee has been active professionally, serving as president of the Cross-Examination Debate Association, vice president of the Southern Forensics Association, and parliamentarian of the National Honorary Fraternity, Pi Kappa Delta. He founded and served 6 years as editor of the journal Contemporary Argumentation and Debate. He has authored over 12 articles and 1 book. In addition, Dr. Brownlee has served as a political debate analyst for several newspapers, including the Dallas Times Herald, the Charlotte Observer, the Los Angeles Herald Examiner, and the Los Angeles Daily News. He was also a presidential debate analyst for the United Press International. At CSUN, Dr. Brownlee has promoted opportunities for students to debate in a variety of international settings, including the People's Republic of China, the Netherlands, Moscow, and Montreal. Please help me welcome one of my favorite professors from CSUN, who ignited my passion for mock trial argumentation and debate. He's the reason why I do it in my classes, Dr. Don Brownlee, to the judges panel. Dr. Joel Lemuel. Dr. Joel Lemuel earned his BA in Political Science and an MA in Communication Studies from Georgia State University. He earned his doctorate in communication from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism in 2016. Dr. Lemuel has taught a wide variety of courses in rhetorical theory and criticism, communication research methods, intercultural communication, and environmental communication. Dr. Lemuel is currently an assistant professor in the Communication Studies Department at CSUN and is the director of the forensics team, which competes in a wide variety of debate and individual events and welcomes questions today from any interested students. He's the guy you want to see if you're interested. His passion for debate began in high school and further developed during his graduate studies, where he coached students to the highest levels of competitive success in intercollegiate debate. Outside his academic career, Joel has been an active participant in several urban debate leagues across the nation. These leagues are part of a national movement to bring the benefits of advocacy training to traditionally underserved student and teacher populations. Some fun facts about Joel include that he is a fantasy football fanatic and a huge fan of the LA Lakers. Please help me welcome Dr. Joel Lemuel to the judges panel for his first tournament at Pierce College. Last but certainly not least, Dr. John Kephart. Dr. John Kephart received his BA and MA in communication from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication. He finished his PhD at USC with an emphasis on rhetorical theory and criticism and gender studies. Born in sunny Southern California and raised in the beautiful San Fernando Valley, John is a Los Angeles native who loves the Dodgers and debate. He has taught a wide range of courses, including argumentation, gender and media, rhetorical theory, and small group and team communication. As likely to quote the Big Lebowski in class as he is to Aristotle, John believes that critical engagement is just as valuable in our everyday lives and mundane experiences as it is when examining issues of global significance. He served as the director of forensics at CSUN for 9 years and is currently taking a well-deserved sabbatical to examine how fatherhood and the family were used as rhetorical strategies in the 2012 election, as he argues the competing visions of masculinity were used to police the bodies and autonomy of women, people of color, immigrants, indigenous, and queer communities. We know your students miss you and can't wait to welcome you back from your sabbatical. But until then, enjoy this time writing and reflecting on your upcoming book, which we know which will be a great success. We are delighted to have Dr. Kephart back here at Pierce, and we welcome your expertise to the judges panel. Please help me welcome Dr. John Kephart. Okay, so now we're about ready to call up our speakers. Okay, but I want to do a couple of reminders. I want to remind everyone to please silence your cell phones if you have not already done so. Okay, in the event that anybody needs to leave during the speeches for whatever reason, please do so and exit quietly out the back. Okay, so each speaker will have 5 to 7 minutes in the informative category and the persuasive category. Okay, we have a couple of timekeepers, Professor Casabanian and Professor Rosenberg will be timing in. And we also have our wonderful Professor Robert Loy, who's actually going to hold up our famous stop sign should you go over the 7 minute mark. Okay, and he will actually flash the go when it's appropriate to start as well. Okay, you all ready to get this started? Okay. Okay, in no particular order, okay, our first speaker in the informative category is Anna Lundmark.
I'm an EMT, so it's my job to save lives. And when I first started, my training officer told me that you have to pay extra attention to those patients who are depressed. He once went to the same house 3 times in 1 year for a suicidal 14-year-old girl. Each time, the girl's parents told him that they had just increased the dose of her medication. The third time he came, the 14-year-old had succeeded in committing suicide. With an illness that is so quick to take lives away at any age, it is imperative to know different methods of treating it. Instead of the usual antidepressant pills to cure depression, mindful meditation has been proven to be able to grow your brain and cure your mental illness. I'm sure all of you know someone who has been or is depressed, and that person could be you. Also, knowing this will make you happier no matter what your mental state is. I've compiled research from different scientific journals to prove the effectiveness of mindful meditation. I have also cured my own depression by practicing mindfulness. Today, I'm going to tell you what the common treatment for depression is, what mindful meditation is, and how mindful meditation can heal you from depression. So I now want to start by explaining what usually happens when someone is diagnosed with depression. They are taken to a counselor to talk about their feelings and then they are put on an antidepressant to lessen the amount of sadness that they feel. Now, the National Health and Examination Survey was conducted from 1999 to 2014, and they saw that every year antidepressant use was on the rise. In 2014, 16.5% of all females over age 12 were on antidepressants, and 8.6% of all males were as well. That's a big percentage of the population, and the numbers are still on the rise. According to Britannica Academia Encyclopedia in 2018, it is widely theorized that depression is caused by a lack of serotonin in the brain. Serotonin is the happiness hormone, and thus SSRIs, or selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, were born. What these SSRIs do is they block the reabsorption of serotonin in the brain, allowing for more serotonin and supposedly making the person happier. However, there is definitely something missing if we think we found the solution, because evidence proves otherwise. In 2016, the Nordic Journal of Psychiatry documented that there's an increased risk of suicidal thoughts and suicide attempts in depressed people taking antidepressants versus depressed people who don't take them. How could this be the solution if there are still so many people in pain? Now we've gotten to my favorite part of this discussion. I'm going to tell you the exact method I use to cure my depression without the need for anything else. Mindfulness, as Dr. Malcolm of the University of Western Sydney stated in 2008, is a way to cure depression by focusing your attention on internal and external experiences without judging them. It sounds simple, but it teaches patients acceptance of themselves. According to the American Journal of Critical Care in 2017, in order to become mindful, you must first become aware of your breath. Then, pay attention to life moment by moment without judgment. This teaches patients to stop recycling negative thoughts and start actively processing their thoughts and emotions. Yes, it all sounds wonderful, but you may be thinking, where are the scientific facts that this actually works? Well, I'm happy to tell you that there is evidence that mindful meditation not only cures depression, but it will change your physical brain. Dr. Andrea Gold of the Scientific Research Symposium stated in 2015 that depressed people's brains have an underactivity of the prefrontal cortex and an overactivity of the amygdala. Now, the prefrontal cortex is the part of your brain that processes thoughts and emotions, and your amygdala is your stress and your fear response center of your brain. What this means is that depressed people have a hard time processing their emotions and thoughts, but it's very easy for them to feel stressed or fearful. Mindful meditation solves this problem. Harvard Medical School did a study in 2012 where they had depressed people either do mindfulness training or not do mindfulness training. And those who did mindfulness training had a decrease in amygdala activity as compared to those who didn't do it. Also, they had an increase in gray matter in their brains. Now, gray matter is where the nuclei of nerve cells are located. This means that their brains literally grew. Dr. Marina Kusid of Military Medicine reported in 2016 that mindful meditation has also been proven to activate the prefrontal cortex. What this means is by practicing mindful meditation, depressed people have a better time processing their thoughts and emotions, they are less stressed and fearful, and it decreases their likelihood of depression again in the future. In conclusion, one can use mindful meditation as a form of treatment for depression instead of the usual antidepressant medication. If more people knew about this, we could save more lives. The 14-year-old who committed suicide would have had another option. Everyone is different, and we can't expect everyone to need medication. Therefore, I hope you keep this in mind the next time you or someone you know feels depressed or stuck. There's always a way out, and this is one of them. Thank you. I just wanted to let everyone know I have a handout on how to be mindful and to remind you to be mindful in your everyday life, which I put on the top. So just come see me afterwards if you'd like to learn more. Thank you.
Thank you, Anna, for that very informative speech.
Okay, our next informative speaker is Orion Fitlovich. Please come up.
Imagine traveling specifically to Utah to see the Grand Canyon and being told that the park is closed. Imagine trying to take out a loan for a new business venture and being told that the account is closed. Imagine having a court date set for your civil case and being told that the court is closed. Now imagine that the reason for all of these closures is because the government itself is closed. Hi, my name is Orion Fitlovich, and today I will be talking about what a government shutdown is, the timeline of shutdowns throughout history and the current administration, and the economic and social impacts they have on our society as a whole. So what is a government shutdown? According to an article called Government Shutdown on Investopedia, a government shutdown is the closure of non-essential offices of the government due to lack of approval on the federal budget for the upcoming fiscal year. Things that are affected by these shutdowns are Social Security applications, law enforcement recruitments, national parks, and other aspects of the government and our lives. The Congressional Budget Act of 1974 was the spark that lit the fuse. According to a page on the UC Berkeley database, the 1974 Congressional Budget and Empowerment Act created a set of institutional changes designed to help Congress regain power of the budget process. It had two main goals. First, to strengthen and centralize Congress's budget authority, and second, to reduce the president's impoundment authority. It helped Congress gain power over the budget, but it also caused issues when Congress could not agree, leading to a series of shutdowns. Let's take a look at the timeline of shutdowns. Before the Trump administration, there were a total of 18 shutdowns, starting in 1976. The first shutdown occurred on September 30th to October 11th, 1976, under President Ford. According to Dylan Matthews from Vox.com, President Ford vetoed a bill for the Department of Labor and Health, Education and Welfare, which resulted in the first shutdown. Let's move along to shutdown number 7, which occurred on November 20th to November 23rd, 1981, under President Reagan. This shutdown was the first one that officially affected government functions. Let's give a head again to shutdown number 18, which occurred on October 1st to October 17th, 2013, under President Obama. The reason for this shutdown was the Obamacare disagreement, and there was a 5-year gap between this shutdown and the next one. Now that we've discussed some of the shutdowns from past administrations, let's discuss the current administration. Since the beginning of the Trump administration, there have already been 2 shutdowns. The first occurred on January 20th to January 22nd, 2018, and the topic of disagreement was DACA and the U.S.-Mexico border wall. The second occurred on February 9th, 2018, and holds the record for the shortest shutdown in history, lasting less than 6 hours. Now let's talk about the economic and social impacts. During the first shutdown of 2018, an NPR podcast interview with David Wessel, the director of the Hutchins Center on Fiscal and Monetary Policy at the Brookings Institute, came out about the economic impacts of government shutdowns. Some of the impacts he spoke about were the costs of these shutdowns and closures of services like the Internal Revenue Service, for example. Wessel said that economists estimate that it'll shave about 0.1 percentage point off of growth of GDP each week the government is closed, $2 billion a day. Let's use the current administration as an example. During the first few months of 2018, there were approximately 3 days and 6 hours of government shutdowns. Multiply that by $2 billion a day, and that's $6.5 billion lost in just the first 2 months of 2018. Now let's talk about the social impacts. After the shutdowns, there's a temporary drop in government approval ratings. The following statistics are from Carolyn Bowman from Forbes and John Bowden from The Hill. During the Clinton administration, Congress began with a 35% approval rating, and after the shutdowns, dropped to 30%. During the Obama administration, Congress started with a 19% approval rating, and after the one shutdown, dropped to 9%. And lastly, in the Trump administration, Congress started with 37%, and after the shutdowns, dropped 13% in the approval ratings. After interviewing both a Republican and a Democrat about their opinions of the Trump administration after the shutdowns, I received the same response. They said, "I do not blame Trump. I blame Congress for being divided and having trouble coming to an agreement." In conclusion, in the last 50 years, there have been 20 shutdowns with economic and social impacts, like billions of dollars in monetary loss and negative views of the presidential administration. Whether Americans know it or not, these shutdowns impact all of our lives. Staying informed is a powerful tool, and next time one of these situations occur, you will have a heads up on how you will be impacted too. Thank you.
Big round of applause for our second speaker. Thank you so much for educating us about government shutdowns. Next is our third speaker in the informative category. Will Robert Johnston please come up?
Question: how many people here have ever watched a cartoon or an animated feature and thought to yourselves, "Man, what kind of drugs were that when they made that?" Well, that's precisely what I thought when I was about 4 or 5 years old and I watched my very first cartoon, an episode of SpongeBob SquarePants. Justly, I was terrified. But over time, I grew to love it. The moving images, the colors, everything. I'm 19 years old and I still watch cartoons. No one can do a thing about it. So it's not so much that I want to love it anymore. I want to know more about it, and I want to pass that information on to you. So today I'm going to be telling you about the history of animation and its prominence over the century. I'm going to be telling you about the very first animations as well as some of its pioneers, its evolution over the century, and its effect on modern culture. So, 1908, French graphical artist named Émile Cole created the very first animation called Fantasmagorie, which in French roughly translates to an amalgamation of moving images. And it was very basic. It was white on black. It was only a minute and 20 seconds, but it was over 700 frames and took over 5 months to make. The process for animation is grueling, as you can see. So fast forward 20 years, and we witnessed the birth of the biggest animation company in the world, Walt Disney, or as they were called back then, Disney Brothers Studios. And contrary to popular belief, Walt Disney didn't actually create the mascot Mickey Mouse. It was in fact his most loyal animator, Oob Ewerks. So of course, Mickey Mouse was a huge success, and they wanted to put him out for a test drive. And what better than to feature him in his very first publicly released cartoon, Steamboat Willie. And so Mickey Mouse whistled his way into people's hearts. And Disney was put on the map, and animation was only thought to get better from there. So now we see its evolution over the century. In the 30s and 40s, we see the first big style change of animation go from the more wavy Disney style, sing-song-esque, to more energetic and eccentric kind of animation that really strayed more to the cartoony side of animation. Big cartoons of this era were Looney Tunes, of course. You got Popeye the Sailor and Tom and Jerry. So now we get to the 50s and 60s, which is where animation sort of evolved into this more jazzy, kind of simplistic shapes and everything kind of style. Cartoons of this era being Rocky and Bullwinkle, if you ever heard of that, and Astro Boy. And Astro Boy is kind of an interesting one because it's the first Japanese animation, or as we call it, anime. Any big anime fans out there? The first anime to be released into the West and get popular in the West, so this was in fact the era where anime got its start. It's also the era in which animation and advertising got its big break as well. Companies like Kellogg's and Campbell's would commission animated commercials to have their products appear more to kids. Now we get to the dark era of animation. This is the late 60s to the late 80s. This is when television got extremely popular and cartoons were being pumped out like that, left and right. Unfortunately, because of this, many of these cartoons turned out to be very cost-effective and lazy. And while we did have some good ones like The Flintstones and Scooby-Doo, many were bad. And this also suffered big for theatrical animation as well, as Disney suffered a huge budget cut from this, and its films at the time, such as The Jungle Book and Robin Hood, were much rougher and not very well received by critics, though we do hold them in our hearts today. And now we get to the 90s of animation, which is the renaissance of animation. This was when people actually started to care again, and a new breath of life was breathed into the art form. You've got The Simpsons, you've got many nostalgic Nickelodeon shows such as Hey Arnold or Rugrats, and you've got big animation studios to rival Disney, such as Pixar and DreamWorks. So what's animation like today in modern times? Well, with the big rise of computer technology, we've got a big rise in computer animation and 3D graphics. And while this is a much more efficient way to animate, sacrifices do have to be made, as Disney, along with other animation studios, shut down the doors to the 2D animation studios to make room for more 3D projects, which is unfortunate, but 2D animation is very much still prevalent in TV and online. And speaking of online, a big rise in computer animation has led to a big rise in independent animation. As people have put it, not just Hollywood can do this stuff anymore. Any schmuck can buy an animation program and make their own cartoon and release it online, or on TV, or at one of the many animated film festivals all over the world. And it's this kind of prominence in the world that animation has had its place as a legitimate art form. It's the stories that they tell. I mean, how many people here watched the first 10 minutes of Pixar's Up and it was like, that's it, I've been emotionally compromised. It's that, and the themes, and not just themes for children, but themes for adults. I mean, it was thought back then that only children could watch cartoons because it was, you know, thought of that way. But now anyone can watch a cartoon, you know, kids, adults, old people, anybody. So in conclusion, why do I like animation so much that I'm sharing it with all of you? It's the concept of it, this idea that anything, no matter how weird or fantastic it may be, can be put on a screen and shown, any idea, any image. You know, it's not so much that you can't just say something anymore, you gotta draw a picture, or in this case, several pictures. And it's just all this background behind it, and everything that's just enticed me so much and wanted me to become an animator. And I am starting to learn how to animate, and it just has been a very big part of my life, and I'm thankful to share it with all of you. So with all that said, that's all, folks.
Thank you, Robert, for being so animated and teaching us about animation. That was great. Our next speaker in the informative category is Akani Saito. Please come forward.
There are many people who have diabetes, and one thing they need to do is poke their fingertip multiple times a day with needle. Ouch! Now, imagine they just put our small devices in their eyes to monitor the glucose level without any pain. In the world, according to WHO, World Health Organization website, there are millions of people who have diabetes. And currently, researchers are developing a device called smart contact lens. When I first heard about this topic, I thought it was very interesting. So I spent a lot of time reading articles and continuing research, so I can provide this information to you. Today, I would like to inform everyone about the new developing technology with contact lens, which can help many patients with diabetes. The new contact lens is called smart contact lens. And it has been developed by researchers. It also has more possibility for other uses. So, what is the smart contact lens? According to Science Daily, the smart contact lens, which helps many patients with diabetes, is made of highly stretchable and transparent materials, along with some electrode components. According to the Diabetic Alert website of WHO, 422 million adults have diabetes. That means out of 11 people, one has diabetes. Patients with diabetes continuously need to monitor and control their blood sugar level. This device monitors blood sugar for them, so doctors can treat these diseases more easily. This device is built into the lens with flexible components. These components include a stretchable antenna, LED display, glucose sensor, and leak fryer. When a patient puts a smart contact lens in their eyes, the smart contact lens starts monitoring the glucose level within the patient's tears. When a patient wears a smart contact lens, LED turns on to show the wireless power is working. However, when the glucose sensor catches a high sugar level, it sends an electrical signal to LED turning it off. The lens can transmit the health information in real time using wireless antenna. Okay, now let's talk about the advantages and disadvantages. There are two major advantages of this technology. Patients will no longer poke their finger, and doctors could get their health information potentially in real time. There was one major disadvantage of this technology. It would obstruct vision and make the users uncomfortable because the earlier versions of contact lenses had materials that were not stretchable and flexible. As you can see, the advantages far outweigh disadvantages. So now let's talk about the final point of this topic. To enact this device, researchers still need to do more experiments because this device has not been tested on humans yet. But it has been tested on cute little bunny rabbits. According to the researcher, while the rabbits were wearing the contact lenses, they did not show any abnormal behaviors. Since this device has not hurt little rabbits, it can be tested on human body. The researchers also look forward to this smart contact lens technology working in other fields. For instance, hearable computing devices could be used instead of smartwatches or smartphones. Thus, in the future, people would not have to carry any physical devices to call others, text your family, or check your social media online. All they need is to wear the contact lenses instead. Also, smart contact lens could be developed to enable people to see in the dark. This project is currently being supported by US military funding. However, I think this will be very useful in civilian life. For example, people do not see as well in the dark. So this smart contact lens could help avoid accidents and save lives. Today, I introduced the smart contact lens. In debut, I talked about what the smart contact lenses are, how it works, its advantages and disadvantages, as well as future implications. Biosensing contact lenses are the future in the medical field. Although it is still being developed and researched, this groundbreaking technology can change the world for the better. In 2015, 13.3 million Americans, 9.4% of the population have diabetes. Considering that diabetes is one of the most common diseases in America, their smart contact lens can help many patients to live more easily. It not only benefits the patient, but the patient's family or loved ones. Given how common this disease is, you will someday likely know someone who has diabetes. Personally, I hope this technology will be implemented soon, but this technology is still being developed and tested. So, people also need to try to prevent diabetes with healthy food and regular physical activities. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
much, Akani, for making us smarter with your smart contact lenses speech. We all feel smarter by the minute today. Okay, our fourth contestant and the last contestant in the informative category is Ellen Lenderman.
How's everyone doing today? All right, guys, so I'm going to ask you to get vulnerable with me. Can everybody close your eyes? I don't see everyone's eyes closed. Okay, there we go. So, I want you guys to focus on your heartbeat. Now, focus on your closed eyes. Imagine your heart speeding, your hands sweating and shaking, and the inability to gather your thoughts and focus. You feel your heart beating in your chest, you feel your heart beating in your stomach, you hear your heart beating in your head. Now take a deep breath and open your eyes. Those are feelings millions of people will face every day. Those are feelings of anxiety. My name's Ellen, and being diagnosed with anxiety, or specifically general anxiety disorder, at the age of 10, I've lived a life on and off prescription medicine. I've done therapy, I've done meditation, I've tried it all. Trust me, we all have. If you have anxiety, you know you will try to find anything that can try to help you a little bit here and there. So, I'm gonna talk to you guys a little bit about what classifies as a general anxiety disorder, as well as how you can help yourself, or how you guys can help others if you guys have friends or family suffering with the same issues that many of us are. Especially being college students, we've learned that so many more people have anxiety than we've ever thought, and with our generation specifically, anxiety levels have raised by the hundreds. So, have you ever wondered if your anxiety levels are normal? Those anxious feelings when you get on stage to do a speech, are those normal, or do you possibly have an anxiety disorder? Well, let's talk a little bit about it. So first, I'm going to talk about what's classifying as an anxiety disorder. Anxiety is a very broad topic. There are many different things. There are separation anxieties, OCD, general anxiety disorder, which is the most common, and those all differ from just regular normal anxious feelings that everybody can feel. So, according to an article from anxiety.org, anxiety is classified and characterized by excessive, uncontrollable worry over events and activities and potential negative outcomes. What does this mean for me? This means that if I hear a creak in my house in the middle of the night, I might get up, turn on all the lights, make sure nobody's breaking in. Why would somebody be breaking in at 2:30 in the morning? I don't know, but my anxiety believes it's gonna happen, so I'll sit up for another 30 minutes waiting for somebody to break in. Oops. Next, what I might do is, you're sitting in a car. Every time you're in a car, you might picture a horrific accident happening. Why would a horrific accident happen at any moment of your day? I don't know, but your anxiety is gonna try to convince you that it might. So, this all differs from phobias, separation anxieties, or all the compulsive disorders that I mentioned earlier. Why? Because general anxiety disorder is all of them combined or none of them at all. It hasn't been studied or researched enough quite yet to know exactly what's causing it and what aligns to it. So, in my opinion, and in my case of anxiety or general anxiety disorder, I've learned the thing I identify with most is free-floating anxiety. Calm Clinic identifies free-floating anxiety as anxiety that comes and goes at normal. As you hear my voice, the sudden start shaking out of nowhere. Fine, that's cool. Or anxiety that can't be pinned to anything specific. For instance, if you were to ask me at any given moment, what's making me anxious? I don't know. I don't have an answer for you. It could be anything. Most of the time, my answer would just be, it's my anxiety. Sorry. So now that you know a little bit more about what general anxiety disorder is, let's talk a little bit about how you can help yourself if some of those symptoms or these shaky symptoms seem normal. Having anxiety can make you feel helpless. Others around you, though, are dealing with the same thing. So, one of the first steps, accepting and acknowledging your anxiety. For the longest time, I denied it. I was like, oh, these feelings are normal. It's cool. I can be shaking in class. Oh, I have ADD. It's just ADD. It's not caused by my anxiety and my constant worry. Guess what? It wasn't. And I didn't accept that until way later. I dropped out of college the first time, finally came back now. Woo, a little bit late, but it's okay. And now I've learned that, hey, it's okay, you can move past these as long as you find what's right for you. And that's the second point. It's making sure to find what's right for you. I know an earlier speaker mentioned depression and finding what's right for them, and everybody is different. Works the same with anxiety. Some might find medication, some might find meditation, some might find therapy. I found traveling. What most of you don't know is 24 hours ago, I was in Sedona, Arizona. 24 hours before that, I was at the Grand Canyon. I found that helpful for me, having something to plan, to organize, to look forward to enjoy. That helps me move past my anxiety. So, though you might have not found what's right for you yet, Big Health Organization has given you a couple things that you can do. One, eating healthier, exercising more, and finally, remembering to breathe and put things into perspective. One of the biggest things people with anxiety don't do is they don't put things into perspective. Remembering that it's just your anxiety, it's not reality. So now you're thinking, this doesn't sound too familiar to me. Why would I try to learn about it? Those around you might have anxiety, so here are some tips how you can help them. First off, it's learning about their disorder and what they're going through. Another thing is educating yourself. Kind of like learning it, but educating yourself more specifically about what they're dealing with, because every disorder is different, and every disorder needs different help. Step two, most important, knowing what not to say. I cannot stress this more. Statements such as, don't be anxious, it's fine, don't worry, or the worst of all, the stabber there, I don't see why this is such a big deal to you. Killer in an anxious episode. I can't stress that more. That statement is the worst of all. So now that you guys have learned a little bit, I'm gonna add one more thing. In an interview with Sarah Wallace, she mentioned three key factors you can do to help your friends and family are A, reminding them to breathe, B, reminding them what not to say, and C, reminding them that they are safe. So finally, you guys have learned a little bit about what general anxiety disorder is, how you can help yourself, and how you can help others. I hope you guys see why anxiety has been taken so much more seriously, and mental health in general has been taken more seriously in our society, and you can help yourself or others in an anxious attack. Thank you.
Thank you, Ellen, for educating us about anxiety. So we're gonna give the judges a couple minutes just to tabulate the informative category. If audience members just wanna kind of stretch your legs just for a couple minutes, we'll be back in just a short while.
All right, folks, you heard it. The judges are going to be deliberating about the informative speeches. The formative speeches right here at the Los Angeles Pierce College 2018 Speech Tournament. I'm Mario Lawson, reporting for KPCRadio.com. Right here, we're going to be back. We're going to be back, so stay tuned, folks. Check out the next presentation. If I have to cut this in half, I might have to cut this in half. Why? Because it is getting a little long, and I know that, you know, it can only hold so much on the web, and I want to make sure that you guys hear this whole entire presentation. These speeches are excellent. They're great, and I'm excited. I hope you're excited, too. We'll be back. We'll be back for the next half of the Los Angeles Pierce College 2018 Speech Tournament. I'm Mario Lawson, reporting for KPCRadio.com.